Today, I'm talking about how I've been programming practical examples, real examples for my athletes for athleticism within CrossFit. Now, this is part two of the conversation. If you haven't listened to part one, episode 121, go back one episode, listen to that. That'll be a good intro to this conversation here. So that being said, today, I really want to give examples for athletes or sort of like, you know, a semifinals hopeful and above in terms of their athletic development, where they have all of the prerequisite skills that are sort of necessary to play the game, frankly, if you want to be at doing it at a high level. So if they don't have handstand push-up variations or chest to bars that are really refined and be able to butterfly kip, if they don't have one of their muscle ups, or they're missing, they don't have the ability to cleanly go through double under reps, those sort of things are 100% the priority for those athletes. And for them, going through the progressions and the skill work that's necessary to learn those things is going to take up a bulk of their time and the resources that's going to be dedicated towards skill development or athleticism development as a whole for those athletes. So for those athletes, that is what I would gear towards, those sport movements that you know are always going to be a staple of CrossFit that are going to be necessary for them to compete at a high level in the sport. They need to develop those first. For the athletes who have those and they're pretty refined and pretty dialed in, now you can start to think about, okay, what maybe other movements could come out and what things will help develop their general athleticism. But for the athlete who doesn't have all the skills yet, they've got bigger fish just the fry, so to speak, and they need to work on developing their quote unquote like normal sport movements for CrossFit. Now, I think a good part of this conversation could be talked about, like, should you try to spend time or think about as a coach predicting new movements? Or should you think about it more as like athleticism building as like in a general sense? And I would say like a good subset of the schoolwork that I give my athletes right now, again, for like sort of that like semifinals bubble athlete as an avatar, I would say a good chunk of that is geared towards building general athleticism, where there's going to be certain categories of movements like inversion or hanging gymnastics or bounding work, plyometrics, right? That like, okay, that those things are going to likely to be tested in some form, but I don't necessarily think that it's going to be this specific variation that I give you. However, learning this variation will help you learn other variations that could come out and are likely to come out down the road because they're sort of within this broad category of thing. And then I'll say another subset of movements are ones that I think, again, if I'm thinking about like the what I've written, sort of like examples that are coming up here, they're things that I think could actually plausibly appear in like a games season. And the good news here is that both will help you improve your ability to learn other skills. Both will like, again, like build general athleticism, so to speak. Personally, I don't like to get too deep into the weeds of predicting and trying to really guess as to what could come out. There are certain things that I think have been hinted at that I'm going to be having our athletes focus on. However, I'm not really trying to get really deep into the weeds on that, as I said. So I think of it more as like, let's work on these things, these categories of things that are likely to come out that will have a general carryover to learning other similar type things that are probably very likely to come out, even though I personally don't know what those things are. Hopefully that makes sense. So I want to go into the schoolwork priorities, basically like what things in categories of things that I think are really important and like that I've been programming a lot for my athletes in 2023. So again, first I want to sort of like rehash what we talked about really quickly last time. Last time I defined athleticism as basically you're accelerating the ability to learn movements, right? You're basically pushing two qualities forward. And one is like that initial success going from zero to one of whatever it is, right? It's the time to proficiency in a new skill. Right, not saying that you have it mastered or dialed in, but that you can actually do them and you can do them with some level of consistency. And then two is discovering the efficiency in that technique. So taking it that you can get reps, and even though they're not clean, even though they're not, you know, efficient or economical in how you go about doing them, and you can take them and begin to clean them up and begin to master the movement, right? So those are the two steps, right? From zero to one, and then from having them to being able to clean them up and have them be mastered, have them be efficient where you can do them in workouts and they are fatigue resistant. So as I think about driving those qualities, there's really five different areas of things that I'm thinking currently and how I think about this. For me and the athletes I coach, I'm thinking of this as one, having exposures of several different movement standards of a same movement. So for example, different handstand push-up standards. Two, unfatigued practice of new movements. So again, typically having these in siloed into certain categories of movement, like inversion skill, rope skills, hang gymnastic skills, things like that. Three, plyometric and change of direction work, which is going to be unfatigued. Four, putting pressure onto newly acquired skills. So pressure, different than fatigue, is just as it sounds. It's like seeing like if you're able to sort of be clutch with those movements. Like if you're on a clock, if you're asked to do this where it's in an unbroken set, if you're asked to do this in a novel format where you're asked to do it four times or something like that, even you can do that without putting in the fatigue, I should say. That's what I mean by like putting pressure on the skill. High pressure, low fatigue. And then finally would be fatigued environments of that newly acquired skill. It would be like the final stage you sort of put on there. And I should probably say this as a disclaimer, is like, as I go through, this is going to sound like, oh my gosh, he's giving all this skill work right now. And it's like, that's really not the case. It's like for a high level athlete who has maybe 8 to 10 sessions, 12 sessions in a week, they're probably doing maybe 2 to 3 bouts of 15 to 20 minutes of work of these different skill work. It's not, by no means is it a very time intensive or energy intensive process. It's just more so like making sure you have touches of this throughout that athlete sort of season, and that how you think about that could change and morph over time, basically having progression for that athlete. So it's really, in the grand scheme of things, not a lot of training, not a lot of resources that the athlete's really required to give to this. It's just, frankly, a little bit of time and a little bit of patience that's required. So right now, I'm kind of giving a lot of my athletes that inversion practice, some sort of jump rope practice, because again, just like a lot of the athletes are still learning to clean up, you know, crossover, especially crossover double unders. It's just still learning that. And I think it's very likely to some point come out in some level of competition. So it's just important that they have that when it comes back out. Like, you know, it's probably going to resurface at some point, no different than the pegboard. So it's just important that you see it and start to master it. And then the third one would be sort of like more odds and ends type work, which I call like skill variants. So inversion, like the handstand work, jump rope practice, skill variants. And often that's like with some sort of hanging gymnastics. And for me, like I really focus on like those three categories of things for most of my athletes.
The fitness movement is brought to you by Zor Fitness. We offer coaching and individualized program design, as well as educational content for coaches and athletes. It's all at one place, zorfitness.com.
So let's walk through those five categories of things that I'm focusing on for my athletes in terms of developing their athleticism. First would be exposures to several standards of an old movement. So an old movement being handstand pushups or kettlebell swings, like two things that have been around forever, but there's so many ways that you could standardize them, and it's, some of them, and frankly, have been a disaster in the past, but yet we see them come back out and have a similar type thing. So you need to make sure that you can optimize for each of those unique standards, because the movement changes as the standard changes. If you have a bar-facing burpee and you can jump off with 1 foot, that's different than if you can jump off with 2 feet. No different than if the handstand push-up is a 40-inch box. You might want to tilt your fingers in and kind of keep your pinkies against your second finger, your ring finger, to make sure that you're minimizing the amount of distance that you have in terms of width. Whereas like if you have a line, you can spread your hands as wide as you want to go there, and it's going to allow for you to basically take up as much width that you possibly can. So again, depending what actual standard you have is going to change how you do the movement. No different than a kettlebell swing. If it's, you know, you have to point the bottom of the kettlebell up towards the ceiling, you're going to grip it and like, you know, just your trajectory of your swing is going to be a little bit different versus if it's like the games this year where it was like, okay, you got to get the horn above your brow, essentially. So it's like, okay, we need to make sure that you can get there as easily as possible. And whether you bend your arms a little bit might change from an American swing where you're going all the way up overhead to sort of like a hybrid Russian swing where you're getting it up to eye level. It's going to change. So just giving the athlete different looks, I would probably err on the side of more recent, more often, and then sort of give them infrequent touches of other things to just make sure they're getting it once in a while. I also tend to do that for like strict versus kipping, frankly, for like a handstand pushup in particular. It's like, okay, let's give you more strict because that's kind of great carryover to kipping, but let's make sure as you get close to the competition, you practice several different standards, which is like a standard kip as well, to make sure that you can have that skill actually carry over and have that capacity carry over. And it's going to be no different for anything else. So, you know, standards of old movements, different takes. That's the first thing. Two, unfatigued practice of new movements. So this is that 0 to 1 that I talked about in the previous episode. I'm going to give an example, and it'll just sort of explain it, right? Like, say that the athlete's working on their inversion skill for the week, handstand stuff. So they got a running clock from 0 to 8 minutes. On that clock, they're going to be doing unfatigued freestanding handstand hold practice. So kicking up, trying to keep their hands static, and yeah, hold that as long as they can. When they fall back down, rest a full recovery and repeat that process. From 8 to 16 minutes on that clock, they're doing freestanding handstand push-up practice. And for these, typically I have people like, you know, do a handstand push-up, like advance like 4 feet, like through a handstand walk, do another rep, like they typically have at in-person competitions. And then from 16 to 24, two lengths of 25 feet handstand walking unbroken with a 180-degree pirouette at the turnaround. So basically 15 feet out, 15 feet back, but you're not kicking down in the middle. You're turning around past that line and coming back unbroken. So like an easy variation of a pirouette. So that was 1 week. Obviously, maybe not obviously, but these all have progressions that I wrote out, and they change over time and morph as the athlete gets deeper into it. And as they show that they're proficient in it as well. Like if this person says that it was really easy to do that 2x15 with unbroken with a turnaround, it's like, okay, maybe you do a, you know, 720 degree turn, or you do a 360 in the middle of that length versus at a 180 at the end. Things like that where it's going to start to challenge them. Or maybe they do like a, you know, a 5 foot, 10 foot, 5 foot sort of walk where they have to have two pirouettes of 180 degrees in between there, right? Again, a lot of different ways you could take it, but that's sort of like the gist of it. Here's a different one for rope skills. Is that as the category, 15 minute rotating EMOM, 30 seconds of crossover single under practice. As the first minute, second minute was 30 seconds of speed steps. Third minute was 30 seconds of triple under practice. So again, oftentimes I won't have that like rotating. It'll be more like that first example I gave with the handstand, where it'll be like 0 to 8, you know, 8 to 16, 16 to 24, where you have like these different pockets of time and you're practicing a single skill in that time. Now you're going through rounds of different skills. And then hang gymnastics, a similar type format as the rope skills, where it's every 2 minutes though. So basically they have 1 minute on, 1 minute off, 1 minute they're practicing and rotating through each of these skills. So the first one was 60 seconds of bar pullover practice. Second one was 60 seconds of candlestick practice, both single and double leg. So candlestick, we might've heard it referred to as like a deck squat. It's basically like going from standing to like laying on your back, like rolling back onto your back and then rolling back forward into like a pistol position, or like a really deep air squat and standing back up. So that's candlesticks. So they're just like practicing that, because again, that's not gonna be something that they're typically doing in like a normal traditional Metcon or like normal training. And then the third minute was, or sorry, the third every 2 minute. So this is a 2 minute window to get all this done. 20 second L-sit hold, 3 L-sit pull-ups, and 20 second tucked ring support hold. So basically additional work that is going to both fatigue, you know, the musculature that's going to be used in the pullover, as well as the musculature that's going to be used in the candlestick, like the hip flexors, core, trunk flexion muscles. So adding in a little bit of fatigue, a little bit of redundancy, but pretty minor, frankly. So those would be like good examples of like relatively unfatigued practice of like, you know, realistically, maybe not going from like 0 to 1, but like starting to give exposures of like cleaning up that movement. So like more so like starting to refine it and like, you know, figuring out the nuances in the movement and just having an opportunity to sort of refine that a little bit. Three would be plyometrics and that change of direction work. Again, unfatigued. Two different examples I'm going to give. So each of these are like sort of its own, like, you know, 15 to 20 minute block of time in that athlete's training. Usually at the front of the session, like I'll have them go through maybe a little bit of easy cyclical work, some bounding prep, right into this like plyometric or change of direction work. Here's one session example. 170 foot sprint, so three sets of that at 70, 80, and 90% effort respectively. So basically that's additional warm up, getting that athlete ramping up to the point where they're actually able to sprint at what the next part is, max effort sprints. So 170 foot sprint, that's just like the back lot here. 170 feet is one length of that. So 170 foot sprint at max effort, truly max effort, fast as you possibly can, and then walk back as rest. And then every 75 seconds times 9 sets, a rotating extended EMOM, essentially 8 ice skater jumps, which is like a single leg lateral line jump, lateral hop, I should say, like basically for max distance. And then 4 broad jumps where you're resetting in between each of those, and three box jump step downs from seated on a bench up to the box at a tough or high box height. So that's one session. Again, it sounds like a lot, but it really is not very time intensive. The second one was more recently that I gave. Starting off, it was a 10-minute clock of the athletes, basically choice jump rope practice, right? So they could be doing speed steps, they could be doing double unders, they could be doing double under crossovers, single under crossovers, they could be doing triple unders or drag rope or heavy rope, or basically whatever they want, okay? And that was also serving as like additional bounding prep for, because they're going to have more explosive things coming on. Because next, B is a depth jump into a box jump. 8x1.1. So they're doing a depth jump off a 20-inch box. They're rebounding, jumping up onto a box of a high height, stepping down and resetting up onto the lower box, and repeating that again, full rest, 8 times of that. So 16 total reps of that depth jump immediately into a high box jump. Next is a rotating box jump. So basically it's turning up where your hip, like the side of your body's to the box, and then jumping and rotating up onto the box where you turn 90 degrees sort of in the takeoff through the air. So you're landing facing like the normal direction you would for a box jump. So you're doing 3 reps on the same side. You'll rest and then switch, and you're doing 2 on each side, so 4 total sets. And then a rebounding box jump, which is really sort of like tolerance to not only like the Achilles, but like more specifically, it's like if a workout comes out where they need to rebound the box jumps to be competitive, it's important that they have that kind of quality start to build up as we get closer and closer to the open and the early stages of the season. It's important to start to build that quality up. So rebounding box jumps, again, this is low fatigue, but allows them to get a little bit of exposure. 3 to 4 sets, 7 to 10 reps, which is a slight progression off what we did the previous week at an RPE height of 7 to 8. So going to a box height that is challenging, but very repeatable and not max effort. So that's sort of like 2 examples of plyometric work that I've been giving quite a bit. The fourth category would be putting pressure onto these newly acquired skills. So now we're going from like learning the skill, getting that initial success, starting to refine it and on fatigue settings. Now we're starting to put a little bit of pressure, and then next will be fatigue. So putting that pressure onto the newly acquired skill. Keep in mind, like some of the examples of that inversion skill that I gave before, all 3 of these are going to be inversion related. So I've given a lot of progressions of, again, like, you know, from this time to this time, practice this skill. In this other window, practice this other related skill, or like we'll start to do EMOMs where it's like pretty unfatigued. Now we're starting to layer in some fatigue. So this is an example from my training. I've given this to quite a few other athletes as well, like a similar type thing, a 15-minute AMRAP at 50% effort. So again, a little bit of pressure, but it's still pretty low fatigue, frankly. 12 calorie row, 6 foot forward handstand walk, immediately into a 6 foot backward handstand walk. 12 calorie air bike, 2x6 foot handstand walk, unbroken, including the turnaround. So basically going out, turning around, coming back, right? So there's just like small chunks of work back onto the erg, allows you to recover, but yet you're still breathing, still moving a little bit, which adds in a little bit of challenge, a little bit of pressure. Here's another one that I wrote for one of my individual design clients. 4 time, 1 mile run, 1.5 minute static handstand hold, and a 4x4 box. And it has to be completed in unbroken 30-second holds. So 3 30-second holds, each of them must be unbroken in order to count. So again, putting that pressure on the athlete, along with obviously a decent amount of fatigue, but it's not local fatigue, right? It's going to be lower body, so it's not interference, but it is some general fatigue. Back to a 1 mile run, back to a 130 handstand hold in those 30-second increments, and back one more time for a 1 mile run. And then in a very similar vein, I gave a different athlete recently 6 rounds for time, 1 legless rope climb to 15 feet, and a 35-second handstand hold in a 4x4 box has to be unbroken. So again, starting to take these skills, because we had kind of moved through them as sort of a group, as a community, it's frankly like in tandem, because I knew what name game workouts were coming out, and some of them had these skills in them, and I wanted to be ready by the time they got there that they could handle it with some fatigue. So a lot of these people are sort of pushing in similar ways at similar times of the season, and I think it probably makes sense. And a lot of them just needed that work and development as a whole. So I think it actually made a lot of sense. So again, that was sort of like putting more so pressure on it. Like, don't mess this up, essentially. Like, can you do that and make sure that you're able to, hold those unbroken sets. And then finally, fatigued environments of a newly acquired skill. So like more so like testing environments now. So again, I think if I go back to it, like one of the examples I gave before, I'm going to be giving an example of a name game workout that's obviously for time. It's a test, right? Like there's a lot of high pressure, high fatigue environment. What we did before, and like say this was like 2 months before and we're starting to build towards this, I sort of knew that we have this workout coming. How am I preparing my athletes for that? I'm making sure that they go from 0 to 1 and then they're able to start to layer in some pressure into that. So this is sort of like the background to build up towards this fatigued environment. It was 0 to 10 minutes on the clock. They're doing handstand shoulder taps in a 4x4 box. And from 10 to 20 minutes on the clock, they're doing attempts at handstand walking around a 4x4 foot box, going forward, then sideways, then backwards, then sideways around that box. And then from 20 to 30, they're doing lengths of 2x12 feet unbroken, including the turnaround. So again, very similar to like what I said before, each of them just being a little bit of a tweak. And then two of the name game workouts that we've tested, again, 4-time pressure environment, other athletes doing it with you. There's no reset. There's no mulligan. You go. Tap dance for time, 60-minute cap, 2 rounds of a 20/18 calorie row, 5 burpee bar pullovers. People made fun of me, but then they did it in like 2 months afterwards at the games. So it ended up looking pretty smart doing that. Rest 60 seconds in between those 2 rounds, and then right into 2 more rounds of 20/18 calorie row, 5 burpee bar muscle ups, and 36. Oh, sorry, I missed the handstand shoulder taps. 30 handstand shoulder taps in each of those respective 2 round zones. So that was the workout. Obviously, it had elements of like that bar pull-up practice that we had before. It also had elements of the shoulder taps that we practiced before, now in a pressured environment. Again, I didn't expect to see any of those movements come out, but they did in the games, and that was kind of fun to see. Another one was Michael Klump, 4-time with a 15-minute cap, 10 sandbag bear hug carries, being laps of 2x20 feet, 25 feet being 1, 150 for males, 100 for females, 1K row, and then 10 handstand walk reps. Those handstand walks were 2x12 feet unbroken, including the turnaround. Again, so another element that we had practiced in an unfatigued environment before, now pushing it towards the fatigue side of things with a lot of pressure and a lot of fatigue driven in the system. Basically, like, what can you do after you've just rode 1K hard and done a bunch of stuff where you're basically set a heavy sandbag on your chest? So it really challenges the respiratory tissue. And then one more thing that was sort of like a little bit of fatigue driven in the system, but also like just like some more skill-based work, is that we had done a lot of these skill intervals on Saturday mornings before the name game sessions. I actually gave them to some athletes, not others, based on like what I thought their volume tolerance was, but it was really just sort of like additional warm-up, allowing them to kind of feel good and also get, again, some of those athletic building qualities along with that. 5-minute AMRAP at 60% effort / quality focus. That's how we have three 5-minute AMRAPs with 2 minutes of rest in between each one to basically reset, set up your equipment. Yeah, the first one being, and they're all at that 60% effort. The first one being 2 mixed grip burpee pull-ups, because I saw some athletes doing that. I want to see how people practice, see if they like that versus just like the double overhand versus like chin up grip. 4 alternating pistols with a 3-second lower. Again, just working on like that pistol positioning. We had stuff like Frogman coming up, which had a bunch of different challenging pistol variations. So it was important that they saw that. And then 6 V-ups. Rest 2 minutes, next 5-minute AMRAP. 2 supinated burpee pull-ups. 4 alternating pistols plus a single leg jump to 2 3.5 stacked bumpers. So 7-inch jump, single leg jump after you do the pistol. 4 dumbbell burpees at a moderate weight. Final 5-minute AMRAP, 8 kipping ring rows, 4 inverted burpees to the wall, and 4 alternating pistols with the hands behind the back. As I said, those showed up in Frogman. So those are all examples of the ways that I've been programming for my athletes. Those are real examples. And again, it's not a perfect system. I'm sure I will continue to change my mind as I go into this and refine things and continue to progress as the sport progresses. But that's sort of how I've been thinking about programming for athleticism for my CrossFit athletes.
Thanks for listening today. If you're someone who just started listening to the show, I would encourage you to subscribe so you can stay up to date. If you're someone who's been listening for a while, I would encourage you to rate and review the show. And lastly, the best thing that you can do to support our work is also the best thing that you can do for your performance. And that is by hiring one of our coaches. Until next time, stay the course.